Today is July 15th, 2015. My name is Kelsey Bovell, Research Assistant and Master's Student at IUPUI. Today, I have the privilege to be interviewing Mr. Chuck Madden at his home on Fall Creek Parkway. This interview is part of a larger oral history project titled Voices of Indianapolis Waterways. The purpose of this project is to better understand the changing roles of the waterways such as White River, Pleasant Run, Fall Creek, Pogues Run, and Eagle Creek in Indianapolis. Excerpts of some of these interviews may also be used as part of a public art installation by Mary Miss, a New York-based artist. Principal investigators for this project are Philip Scarpino, Director of Public History at IUPUI, and Jason Kelly, Director of IUPUI for Arts and Humanities Institute. Funding comes from the IUPUI Chancellor's Office, the Arts and Humanities Institute, and the Public History Program. I am interviewing Mr. Madden because he is a resident and advocate of the Mableton Fall Creek neighborhood, as well as the vice president of the Neighborhood Association. It should be noted that there are two other interviews done about the Mableton Fall Creek by Amber Rollings, an IUPUI doctoral student in anthropology. In those interviews, done in spring of 2015, Amber interviews Doug Day and Kelly Moreau. Mableton Fall Creek is a historic neighborhood bounded on the east and south by Fall Creek Parkway South Drive, on the west by Meridian Street, and on the north by 38th Street. It includes within its physical boundaries the small neighborhoods of Historic Meridian Park, Historic Watson Park, and Birchwood Neighbors. The Mableton Fall Creek Neighborhood Association is currently led by President Al Polin. Other offices are Chuck Madden, Vice President, Edna Kemp, Vice President, Rachel Nelson, Secretary, and Gerald Dupree, Treasurer. Other board members include Hannah Barker, Mabel Brown, AC, Ryan Funk, and Nate Rush. Fall Creek flows mostly along Fall Creek Parkway, just northeast of downtown Indianapolis. It is part of the Mid-North neighborhood of Indianapolis, which includes Crown Hill, Highland vicinity, Historic Meridian Park, Mapleton Fall Creek, Meridian Highland, and Watson McCord. The parkway is part of the Indianapolis Park and Boulevard system, which is a product of a comprehensive plan developed by landscape architect George Edward Kessler between 1908 and 1915. Kessler's plan envisioned parkways following the four major watercourses in the city: White River, Fall Creek, Pleasant Run, and Pogues Run. Mr. Madden, I would like to ask your permission to do the following. Record this interview.
Yes.
Deposit the interview in the IUPUI Special Collections and Archives, as well as the Arts and Humanities Institute, for the use of their patrons, including possible postings of this interview or parts of this interview to their website, and using parts of the recording in the public art project being carried out by Mary Miss concerning Indianapolis waterways. Do we have your permission to do these things?
Yes, you do.
Wonderful. Let's go ahead and get started with a few easier questions.
All right.
When and where were you born?
Indianapolis in 1956. You need the birth date, or?
If you want it, you don't have to give it.
1230-1956.
You mentioned in your pre-interview that you grew up near the White River.
Yes.
Did you ever play in it or play near it?
Well, yes. I grew up at, at around 51st in Illinois, which is just a few blocks away from Butler, and along with the canal, west and a little bit north, White River ran through the area. I had a friend, we used to actually go and kind of hike around the river. We'd go in it, probably wasn't the best thing, but we were kids, didn't care. It had, you know, little areas that were somewhat like rapids, and we had a little rubber raft we'd go down, and so we had fun in the river, and as I got older, I used to take my nephews down there to fish. Didn't catch much. If we did, it was maybe a carp with a piece of toilet paper in its mouth. it was just a place we could go. I mean, back then, there were a lot more wooded and kind of undeveloped areas. Now, I mean, even Butler had a huge wooded area, and now that's all been reduced. So now all tennis courts and buildings and due to the expansion of Butler. So That's what I used to do around the water.
So when you grew up, what did you decide to do for a living?
I'm a systems analyst programmer. I went to Cathedral High School, and then I was always good at math. And at the time, Cathedral was an all-male academy downtown, and we had one teacher that was taking some Fortran classes, I think, at IUPUI, and he thought it'd be nice to go ahead and instruct, you know, have a special programming class. I liked it. It seemed to be pretty easy. And then when I went to IU, I enrolled in their computer science program. I was only at IU for about a year and a half. My mind tends to wander. but I was good at what I did. And then, so I left IU, took some more classes at IUPUI, but then got a job with a local computer service bureau. And within a few years, I was one of the owners, and it's the same company. I've been working there for about 38 years. So it's been successful enough not to go under. You know, we've gone through several recessions and whatever, and have been able to weather that and change our business dynamic with the changes of technology and things. So that's what I do.
So can you kind of explain to anyone listening to this where we are, especially in relation to downtown right now?
We're about halfway. We are just south of 38th Street in the fairgrounds. The Monon Trail crosses the area just to the north of this house, about a block and a half away. The Fall Creek Greenway is just across the parkway on the other side of that wall. And the parkway is obviously a major thoroughfare now. When I was a lot younger, they didn't have that center lane. Mm-hmm. And actually front yards were extended out. If you've driven along Fall Creek, you'll see people that have really wide areas between the street and their sidewalk. This used to have the same thing, but they consumed all that area because they wanted to change this to a major artery to downtown. This would have been back in the, I want to say, late 60s, early 70s that they widened the parkway and took a chunk out of our front yards, and that's kind of why the driveways are really inclined. We are just about halfway to downtown. A lot of people like to move in this area because it's, you can think of it as being halfway between downtown and Broad Ripple. It is on a major thoroughfare that makes it easy for people to get downtown and actually kind of a pleasant drive if you're not going 50 because of the trees and the creek on the east side of the parkway.
So how did you get from so close to the White River and Butler to here? What drew you to this neighborhood?
That's a long story. I got married when I was 21, and my son was born about 5 months later. I'll leave that at that. And I was struggling. I mean, I had only been working for about a year at my company and wasn't an owner at the time. And so I actually was over, had my first apartment was over on 52nd Street, and it was called Brittany Woods. I don't know what it's called now, but it's just east of the Monon. On 52nd Street. And after that, I moved to the east side with my son and wife. Because my sister had a house, but she had an opportunity to go to Chicago, and she needed somebody to stay in the house, so we did. And then I rented an apartment here in this area the Esplanade, which is at about Pennsylvania and Talbot and 30th Street. There's okay. a set of apartments. I really like the area because I've always liked older homes. And due to some problems with the Esplanade, they had a boiler problem and had to relocate us in one of their other apartments, the Glencoe. And after that, I said, it's time to buy a house. Bought this house. Since then, due to problems my wife was having, we divorced. I had custody of my son, and I raised him here from about 1989 till he graduated from high school in 96. Eventually remarried in 1995, moved to the south side because that's where my new wife had, and she had two children, so I had to do it all over again with two, you know, an eighth grader and a seventh grader. So I went through that again, and then I said, you know, because I kept this house, and I said, you know, I think the area is doing better than it did, and it probably is going to be worth our while to go ahead and do some renovations and move back, and we did. You can see we kind of redid the kitchen, and we redid all the electrical and the plumbing, and added space and made the attic usable, added a dormer in the back, and finished the basement. So it's just my wife and I here, and our grandchildren occasionally. So that's what brought me back. You know, it was an opportunity when I was a lot younger, because I needed a place to raise my son. And I didn't take advantage of the public schools at the time. I didn't like where he would have to be sent. So he had private education, Joan of Arc at 42nd and Central, and Cathedral. He went to the Cathedral, but by then Cathedral had gone co-ed and was up at 56th and Emerson. And that's about it.
So can you kind of explain what the neighborhood was like when you picked to live here?
Oh, it had problems. There were a lot of, I think there's a bit more now, but there were empty houses. It had a huge senior population. The area experienced white flight during the 50s and the 60s. Mapleton Fall Creek used to be the center of the Jewish community in Indianapolis. And matter of fact, the Bethel Temple was right at 34th and Ruckel. Neighborhood changed. It became a bit more lower income. It still had great housing stock. When we moved in, they tended to be older residents. New people had started entering the neighborhood. It was about the time, you know, the plans to develop Fall Creek Place on the other side of the creek had started, and I saw an opportunity. The house was relatively inexpensive, you know, at the time. It was like $59,000. I was willing to be a pioneer. I mean, really. I was always raised not to buy anything for pride or prejudice, you know. And I was raised in Butler Tarkin in a very integrated neighborhood, so I didn't mind community. That's what I felt it was. It was just community. Since then, we've had a lot of new people coming in, renovating the houses because they don't build them like this anymore. And whereas there's some houses that have to be torn down because there is a point where without any maintenance over years, it doesn't matter how well they were constructed, they fall apart. But the area was, I would say, on the decline, but there were a lot of people working in the neighborhood trying to slow that process down or to stop it. And of course, eventually it did. Now we're kind of on the uptick. Of course, there's been a little dives now and then with the housing crisis of 2007. And that's where we picked up a lot of abandoned housing. People couldn't afford to make house payments anymore. And the And crime-wise, it's had its ups and downs, too. I mean, it was referred to as Dodge City a long time ago. But even there, that situation is improving. The crime's actually moved further west and further east. So, and primarily because more people are moving into this area, taking advantage of the housing stock and doing renovations. And when you do that, they're more concerned. They call 911 more often, and that's kind of pushed the crime out. And just even, but you know, recently there's new crime issues. There's heroin's big now again, and that brings in prostitution and theft. And so we're always vigilant for that. But overall, the neighborhood has been on an upswing for the past several years, and we see it continuing.
Have you ever had any experience with the crime in the area?
Oh, once. And it wasn't anything that bothered me. We have an advantage of not having an alley behind us. And when I moved here, the neighbors on each side were home all day. Okay, so there's a certain amount of protection there. The only incident we had was, in about 2005 when we were renovating the house. We weren't living here, but you know, there was drywall going up. We were redoing the ceilings and the electrical and everything. And my wife and I would come here to go ahead and do whatever work we could before the contractors came, and we just noticed that the back door was unlocked. And I didn't leave this unlocked, and then we went to the front and somebody broke the side light out, but couldn't enter that way, so they broke a basement window. And well, we saw obviously kids' tennis shoe footprints throughout all the drywall dust, and all they got was a cheap saw and a few electrical items, you know, switches and stuff like that. And they loaded up a wheeled trash can we had in the kitchen and just carted it away. But they didn't really, I figured the loss was probably less than $150. So, you know, but we also did a few things when, you know, we put extra lighting on the garage and on the back of the house. We put in a glass block in the windows in the basement. And even the side light, besides being tempered glass on the inside, on the outside there are these storms, and those are reinforced with Lexan. So if somebody should try to break through there, they're going to hit a sheet of Lexan, and it's going to slow them down. We have security doors so that, you know, you don't, a lot of people complain about, they call them smash and grabs, or, you know, they break ins, and they typically last only 7 minutes because they break in a house, look for drugs and things like that, and then are out. But I found by my research, the people that have that problem have things like French doors, or they don't have storm doors. And it's amazing what an extra door does, especially when they open in opposite directions. Because you can't kick in a door if you're kicking it in against the jamb. And then you also have, we have heavy doors anyway. So that's the only real crime. You know, we've had our share of people walking down the street and asking for help, you know, but that's always a scam, you know, because you hear the same story over and over again. There's been other people in the neighborhood, particularly in the back neighborhoods that do have alleys, that have experienced a lot more crime than we have. So a lot of it's environment. People have bushes around their front, which means people can't see from the street, or they put in stockade fences around their houses so people can't see in their backyard. And if you've noticed our backyard, mm-hmm. We three here, we took the fences down. Besides making the yard look more expansive, we have visibility. Yeah, but I think you can only do that if you're familiar with your neighbors. So.
Yeah. So let's backtrack a little bit to when you and your son were living here together.
Okay.
What sort of thing did you guys do around Fall Creek?
Well, my son would bring friends by. You know, they'd have sleepovers and whatever. And they're always curious about, I mean, it was before the Monon was done, so it was still an old railroad trestle. and they'd want to go explore. And I encourage that because I think it beats sitting inside and watching cartoons all day or whatever. And so I'd take them up there, and you know, we would cross the trestle to the other side. Of course, that's where Indy Towing is located, but that was kind of an adventure for a kid because there's all these cars. It wasn't fenced like it is now. We just kind of go on explores, you know, and you know, I made it a point to ask my son questions. You know, we'd see something and I'd ask him, you know, what do you think happened here, you know, seeing, you know, broken eggshells or feathers or whatever. And so I know it's close to dinner. I mentioned that when I was a kid, we used to go down to woods and to the river, and you know, I still like to do that, and my son actually likes to do that too. He runs a bicycle shop in Poughkeepsie, and they have mountains there in New York, and that's his favorite thing to do, is just get on his mountain bike and go up a mountain and scream down it. He stopped screaming down it in the middle of the night because they'd have groups with helmets and cans and stuff like that, and you know, I got big rocks. I had to explain to him, you got to stop that, Ed, you've got kids now. But I think it's kind of in our blood, you know, to enjoy nature, and my son really does. And that's the kind of things we did. You know, it wasn't so much going to the store or anything like that. It was just tromping in the woods, or what, as close as we could get from here, which is within walking. I mean, I would take them to other places in Broaderpool. There was Murat Park and stuff like that. So, but anyway, it exposed them to that, where that's his preference. So.
So the Indianapolis Cultural Trail, it's an 8-mile long bike and pedestrian path that connects downtown to Indianapolis neighborhoods. Construction began in 2007 and was just finished recently in 2013. How did that kind of affect the area?
We get a lot more traffic on the Monon now. I mean, I ride my bike to work occasionally because my office is just a little bit more than a mile away, and I can pick up the Greenway and go right there. There's a lot of morning and evening traffic, bike traffic, on the Monon Trail, primarily because they did complete the cultural trail and provided that final link to downtown. So a lot of people are commuting on their bikes to work. If you know, get on your bike and go on there around 5:30, you can tell the ones that are they've got the big panniers on the sides of their bike where they put their work clothes. And, you know, they have their bicycle stuff on. And so there's been an increase of traffic. And it's one of the reasons I've been trying to do things with the neighborhood, because as they go through our neighborhood, I view that as a big window into the neighborhood. So my work on the Monon Trail and that access is primarily a selfish reason to make the neighborhood look better. To people from the outside, make them, encourage them to kind of maybe stop and move here if they were so inclined.
Okay, we'll definitely come back to that project that you're working on. But before we do, one of the things you mentioned during the pre-interview was that you had, during your first few years here, really kept your head down and minded your own business and that sort of thing. So what changed you into a neighborhood advocate?
I got old. You know, there's a point in your life, you know, where you realize that, you know, I don't have to work as hard as I had in the past. You know, kids are out of college, you know, I'm getting grandkids, and so kind of like if you've ever seen the pictures of meerkats, when all of a sudden they all stand up and look around. I mean, think of me doing that, getting my head from being down to looking around. I think what was the straw that broke the camel's back is there was a push from other people in Mapleton Fall Creek. They wanted to put murals on the wall across the street. And with other neighbors that live along the wall, we stood up against that because we viewed them as, you don't live here, and you're going to put something that literally is going to be in our living room every day. And I kind of always viewed wall art, wall tattoos as kind of too urban and not for a nice residential area, which is what I wanted the area to become. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were able to stop that and prevent that from happening. I mean, they'd gotten as far as even putting stencils on the wall. And it was at that point that I said, okay, I've got to really start keeping my eye on these people, and the only way was to participate. And that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years, is just working with the Neighborhood Association, working with the Community Development Corporation, working with Roe and Destination Fall Creek, just to make sure things are happening that are truly in the best interest of the neighborhood and aren't viewed as, oh, this is low-hanging fruit, we can get this done. Well, it's probably not a good idea to do that, you know, without finding out what the neighbors really think. And so it was, I don't know, it's not that I was trying to be a gadfly or anything, but I knew that, you know, if you don't do anything, things are going to happen to you that you don't want to have happen. So, I mean, that's kind of true about anything. There's a little bit of an interruption there, too, because I had diagnosed with cancer several years ago. And so that kind of knocked me out for a while and then back. So,
yeah.
But anyway, it looks like it's moving ahead. You know, part of what I do with the Neighborhood Association is, you know, people want to buy some of these abandoned houses through Renew Indianapolis and make sure that it's not people there that are just wanting to flip a house, that it's somebody that wants to live in the house and not turn it over to an investment group that then will turn it into a low-quality rental, you know. So just trying to do as much as possible to ensure that the neighborhood becomes a working community.
So one of your roles as the vice president, in my understanding, is that you are kind of the go-between between the Mapleton Fall Creek Development Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Just for anyone listening, that is a nonprofit organization that would serve as the community's tool in rebuilding and revitalizing the area. And they also run the annual Destination Fall Creek Festival. And we're party to the possible mural that didn't end up happening. So what would you explain as your role there now?
Well, working as a liaison, and, you know, the Development Corporation had a little bit different name back in the late 80s. It was actually formed by the Neighborhood Association and three churches in the area to work on housing. Now, as time went on, the Neighborhood Association had its problems and was in the woods for a long time. And the CDC kind of stepped in to that vacuum and started doing things that probably were more not in their purview, or what the Neighborhood Association. But as the Neighborhood Association is getting stronger, we're trying to refill that filled vacuum with.
What sort of things did that entail?
There's a huge breakup in the neighborhood. You know, originally it was just Mapleton Fall Creek Neighborhood Association. But due to some of the politics involved and some of the people that wanted power, I'm not that familiar with the history, the neighborhood became fragmented. That's why you have a Watson Park. There wasn't a Watson Park before. There wasn't a historic Meridian Park before. It was all Mapleton Fall Creek. And there was a little bit of stratification because some areas that were a little bit more affluent, Meridian Park, didn't want to really do anything with, you know, what they viewed as maybe a lower area. And so we're kind of working to bring that together, but also to ensure that the Neighborhood Association has a little bit more control of its destiny. I mean, we don't really work on redeveloping houses. That's the CDC's. But as far as the social aspect and keeping neighbors informed about things that are happening or help that they may need as far as remediation or zoning issues or things that people need to know about because they probably aren't in favor of it happening to them, that's what we're working to apprise them of. So I guess is we're just trying to, the neighborhood association is more of the social aspect, and that includes being a referee sometimes between neighbors and stuff like that, as opposed to the CDC, which is housing and development. So and we're trying to establish those I don't want to say barriers, I don't want to say space either, what's the word I'm looking for, boundaries as far as what the tasks are.
Okay. So one of the things you mentioned that they do and that you have been working with them on is Destination Fall Creek.
Right.
Can you kind of talk about what that is and what happens?
If you've noticed some of the other neighborhoods, they have gateways, and we really don't have one here, yet it's a very nice area. I mean, you could look at the gateways of being like at 38th and Fall Creek Parkway, or at Meridian Street and 38th Street, or here at the Monon. That's more of a gateway for people on foot or bike, and the Delaware area. Destination Fall Creek is working to improve those areas, add more park space, add some public art. What the Neighborhood Association did about a year ago is we had an awful neighborhood sign, and we got the funds together and we redid that sign up at Delaware and Fall Creek. And we actually found a local, and then actually the artist actually lives right over there. It's Andrew Winship of Heron School of Art. He's a professor there. And we had a contest and, you know, we had prizes and we put up a new sign and we've gotten a lot of compliments on it because the other one was really awful. But it's those little things we're trying to do to make people feel more attached and wanting to see more things happen as opposed to having things just happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so.
So what sort of things have taken place to attach people, like you said, more to the creek now?
Well, the greenway, especially. I mean, before, no one could really get into that whole area from the other side of the parkway. There was a little bit of green space, but there were no paths. I mean, the whole trees and everything were growing up right up against the wall. And so, and if you're here till a little bit after five, you'll just start seeing heads traveling along that. So people are getting more attached. I mean, the Parks Department did a good job. I mean, there has been a long term plan to increase greenways, where Indianapolis now is has one of the better greenways in the country. And it just encourages people to get out, walk, exercise. And I think people feel pretty good along the greenway, only because, first of all, there's only, you could get on the Fall Creek Greenway and take it from Meridian Street all the way to Fort Benjamin Harrison Park, and only cross like three streets. Okay, so it's not like the Monon that every block you've got an intersection. Plus, there's more crime on the Monon, partly because people can duck out through streets and whatever, whereas the amount of crime along the Greenway, it's relatively safe. So it could be that it runs along the parkway and it's just cars driving by all the time, and so people are visible. But it has drawn people, even to the area. We're getting people that are further downtown coming along the Greenway, because it is a nice bike ride if you should ever decide to go all the way up to Fort Bend. I mean, you know, you'll be putting in 15 miles before you're done. You know, so it just is an amenity that the neighborhood really needed, because without that, there's very little park space. For as big as the area is, there's very little park space, especially south of here. You know, there's over on Talbot, there's Al Pullen Park, but that's more playground type park, basketball courts. But the only green areas, there's the Bird Preserve over in Watson, mm-hmm. and there's the Greenway. And I think people need that. It gives them respite and helps them relax. And again, the same reasons I encourage my son to do that, and I always enjoyed it.
So the Greenway goes pretty much along Fall Creek.
Right.
With so much more pedestrians going through and people and neighborhoods seeing that area, has it inspired anything for people to start working on improving the creek?
Well, of course, there's the deep rock tunnel, you know, to get the combined sewer overflow out of the creek, which is another issue. But I better stop turning my head. I'm probably fading out on the recording. Butler's got their Streamlines project that they're working on. If you've gone by, you'll see some construction occurring at 30th and Fall Creek, and that is from a National Science Foundation grant, and that is supposed to get people more in touch with science and the environment through art, which I still quite haven't figured out yet. But you know, they're working on an installation there, and so. I mean, that's, without the Greenway being there, that probably wouldn't have happened. So there is kind of a snowballing, you know, that one person does something and then that opens up an opportunity to do something else. The development that the CDC and the neighborhood is planning for on Delaware, you know, is part of that is to have crosswalks and redirect traffic someone and regulate it a little bit more so people can get to the Greenway from here. I mean, that's still a big problem that we have, is that you've got to play dodge 'em to get to the other side. And we're always looking for ways to improve that access, because, you know, like they say, if they build it, they'll come. And that's what we see is happening. Which is favorable for the neighborhood, because people walk along the Greenway, they look at these older homes, they say, boy, I'd like to live there, you know. And because they're not going 50 miles an hour now, they can actually stop and look and see that there is a lot of quality in the neighborhood.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Neighborhood Association. So the association seems to be very active. There's a website that's updated regularly, mm-hmm. and a newsletter called the Urban Times.
It's actually a newsletter in the Urban Times. But,
oh, okay.
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 The Urban Times covers all these neighborhoods, and so there's a section for Historic Meridian Park and Watson Park. I mean, they all have a place where they can contribute an article. And that's what we're taking advantage of. Years ago, there used to be a Mapleton Fall Creek Gazette. But, you know, times have changed. We're currently working on getting that distributed throughout the neighborhood, and delivering it actually to residents' houses. But anyway,
thank you for the clarification. So what sort of impact do you think such an active neighborhood association has on this neighborhood in particular?
Well, I mean, we're still rebuilding. Mm-hmm. You know, we're getting the right people on the board. You know, for years it was, you know, do you want to be on the board? I guess so, but nothing happens. And so it's a difficult task, but we look at people that are in the neighborhood associations that, that we view as assets and encourage them to work with it. So we're working on a board that is effective and is not inactive, and that's helped a lot. We recently had a elected a new board member at our last meeting that has a lot of experience with community outreach and things like that. So those are the kind of things that we're trying to bring back and have the leadership that can address particular areas. Like Rachel Nelson is the one that's updating our website. I mean, it hadn't been updated in years, and so we, you know, developed a new one, and she worked on all that. Hannah Barker is doing all the articles for the Urban Times and getting stories to put in there. And we have attorneys on the board now, you know, because we need to address our bylaws and update those. And with Angelina and we're trying to be more effective in reaching out to the neighbors. Edna Kemp works with some of the social aspects as far as National Night Out and trying to get the neighbors organized. But we're also looking at not reinventing the wheel either, because back in the 80s and the 90s, the Neighborhood Association had to do it all. It's a different paradigm mm-hmm. right now. You know, you could look at the schools in the neighborhood, and they were the kids that went to those schools lived in the neighborhood. That's not true anymore. I mean, they've got the charter schools and the magnet schools, and so you can't even look at a school that's still in the neighborhood, and any of those people actually live in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So things that targeted schools, it's not effective anymore. There are areas like, you know, reading clubs for kids and things like that that were very good in the 80s and the 90s, but the library provides all that. Mm-hmm. And so what my thrust is, let's facilitate that by finding out why people aren't going to those programs, okay? Because if we set them up, they're not going to come to ours either. To find out why they aren't, I mean, if they need transportation, let's try to partner with some other organizations that can provide transportation so people can take advantage of those programs and be more of a facilitator than a creator of new programs, but, you know, take advantage of what's already there. I think it's a complete waste to reinvent the wheel all the time. It just is just, it's not productive. And you spend a lot of resources on something that, bottom line, is it's still not effective. So,
One of the jobs that you're listed as being in charge of is the beautification committee. Yeah. What is that?
Well, I wouldn't say the beautification. I'm in charge of properties. So, you know, I work with Renew Indianapolis when somebody's got an application in to purchase one of their homes. And to make sure we do our due diligence to make sure, okay, they're not going to flip the house. It's not an investment company that is essentially, you know, instead of there being one slumlord, there's 20. you know, and we're looking for people to buy these houses whose intent is to invest the right amount of money. We look at these properties and estimate how much it's going to take to rehab them. And if somebody comes in with a low estimate or an unrealistic timeline, you know, they say, oh yeah, we can get this fixed up in 30 days. No, you can't. There's holes in the roof, you know, the flooring's all gone. I mean, if you do it in 30 days, it's not good. And so we ensure that they're gonna have the right funding and that they also provide us with assurances, and that's why we're looking for long-term owners that are going to be at the property to keep it clean, you know, to keep the grass cut, that type of thing. I also work with Joe King, who's I think I mentioned him. You know Joe, or talked to him. But he's with the Dirty Dozen Hunting and Fishing Club, and years ago they adopted Fall Creek, and so, you know, they go through and they pick things up through the neighborhood. And I organized cleanups also to distribute buckets and pick up tools and gloves to neighbors. So, you know, like just pick up around their block a little bit. And it's trying to get that synergism going where if you get a number of people doing it, you know, things look a lot better. Before I started, you know, Joe would come out and they would try to clean up along the wall. They'd do it twice a year, but in the meantime, we had bushes and all kinds of things. And if you look now, it's just a wall. And so we're talking now about, you know, what would be a good thing to beautify the wall. And so we're talking about maybe putting a facing on it to make it look like brick or something like that, to make it kind of attractive, more natural, you know, Indiana limestone or river rock or something, just to make it look suitable for a park-like neighborhood, you know, that just makes people calm down a little bit. So the beautification is really just picking up the mess. We organize things every year trying to pull weeds in some of the community gardens. There's one around the 88 and around our sign too, and do that replanting. So we're trying to find those things that we can do that are just not so much that we're going to change the neighborhood and make it beautiful on our own. It's really to have people stop and take pause and think, well, I can do that, something like that in my yard, you know, or, you know, plant some flowers, keep my grass cut, you know, just, again, working to instill a sense of community, and you're not an island, that you can just not participate in the neighborhood, so.
How do you convince neighbors to participate, then?
Oh, that's a hard nut. It's hard. I mentioned that the neighborhood was in the woods for a long time, so there's a lot of jaded residents that, you know, tried to do stuff in the past and nothing happened, and so they got sick of trying. And so I try to target newer neighbors, younger people moving in, by reaching out to them and say, you know, want to participate in this cleanup. We use nextdoor.com, which is a kind of like a neighborhood Facebook, that has been very helpful because it's allowed communication with the neighbors without anything political or anything like that, where we can announce things we're doing to clean up, or, you know, there's this crime in this area, or watch out for this person, or something as simple as I got a sofa to sell. But it's very private and exclusive to a neighborhood. Someone on the east side couldn't participate in some of the interactions that occur on that site here. But it's been helpful. But again, I found that there's a few of the older residents that still want to do something. A lot of them were part of that breakup that I mentioned with the neighborhood, so they're reluctant to do anything. And so what I'm trying to do is get enough, an effective board, enough residents who people can see are actually participating, that we actually are successful in getting things done. I'm not feeding you yet. That is Sammy. She is a barn cat and is always hungry. We have another cat, Jade, that is a lot smaller than she is, but Jade likes to run around and exercise. And so, so that's kind of what I'm just trying to do, is just to re-energize everybody. And, you know, once we do things like maybe get the bylaws rewritten and it just change some of that exclusionary language in the bylaws. The bylaws were rewritten several years ago as part of this breakup, and it kind of, they read as being almost unfriendly. Okay. And I want to eliminate that out of those bylaws, because I want everybody, you know, you can still have your little neighborhood group, you can still be Watson McCourt or Watson Park, and you can still be Meridian Park, but let's all work together for a common betterment in the neighborhood. So.
So one of the big projects you guys have been working on is the Mid-North Indiana Quality of Life and the Quality of Life Plan.
Right.
Who all was involved in that?
A lot of the adjoining neighborhoods, so Highland Park, Crown Hill, Mapleton Fall Creek, Meridian Park, all the neighbors in this Mid-North area. We're working with the Children's Museum, and of course the Children's Museum had a lot of skin in the game because, you know, they're right in the middle of it, and actually, you know, it doesn't look good for their image when the neighborhood becomes run down. So what we're trying to do is work together, and we actually have a Congress Congregation of Neighborhoods, or I don't remember what the acronym is anymore. You know, to point out what we've been successful at and what things we need to say, okay, that's a bridge too far right now. This is working, this isn't working. Where as a unified group or with representation of all the neighborhoods, you know, we can look at more expansive impact on the area. I mean, it's you know, Bullitt doesn't know the neighborhood boundary. You know, if there's crime here, it's going to be here. So we need to work together to get things done and improve the neighborhood, the greater neighborhood, I should say.
So there's 8 major aspects listed for the Quality of Life Plan: aesthetics, business development, crime and safety, education, housing, senior advocacy, excuse me, youth engagement, and Fall Creek destination. What would you say are some of the most important points within the Quality of Life Plan?
Well, I can tell you that the crime and safety, we didn't get the participation that we'd like, and so it's kind of been on a hiatus for a while. I'm working with Anthony Bridgman at the Children's Museum. He was kind of the chairman of that committee, but couldn't get anybody really to participate. So, but at the neighborhood level, you know, we have the mayor's liaison there, we have the IMPD there, we have code enforcement. So the smaller neighborhoods are kind of picking up that slack. There hasn't been any real unified effort to address crime with the neighborhoods, because it is kind of local in the sense that, you know, some areas you have people that are concerned about it, and other places they're willing to live with it, you know. Or, I mean, that's a hard one. I feel sorry for Anthony, but he's trying to reassess and reevaluate what they want to do with that. What was the other one? I can go through all of them
if you would like to.
Business development is being worked on by the CDC. They're planning on the big Central Avenue project, putting storefronts and senior housing along the south end of Central in the neighborhood. Aesthetics really hasn't met lately. I think the last time they gathered was maybe after the wall thing. Wow. and realized that, you know, they didn't do their due diligence to find out what was really needed. They were looking for low-hanging fruit. What's something we can get done now? So they really haven't met, but it's almost kind of been taken over by Destination Fall Creek, because Destination Fall Creek is working on the gateways and the development on Delaware. So you know, one area kind of fades and another one's picking up the slack. I know the CDC has been working a little bit with senior advocacy, and of course they're working on housing. And the Children's Museum is trying to do their part for education. They have after school programs and that type of thing. The youth engagement is also something that I think the Children's Museum is working on. But as far as what youth engagement, as far as the Quality of Life Plan and neighborhoods doing things, it's Not so much. I've been trying to bring Joe King in it with his, because he's also got another group, the Outdoor Youth Academy. Mm-hmm. Joe grew up along the creek, would fish on it and things like that, and he's trying to get kids interested in nature and stuff. And he actually sponsors a girls and boys archery classes, because he's found that that instills discipline. And he says things like the girls really do outperform the boys on that. They just are not distracted and they can do it. So it's like Katniss Everdeen, is that? We may have a lot of those running around. Again, it's more of finding out what we really have. And even though quality of life tried to define these areas, there really wasn't much put into bringing the pieces together to make them work, you know, and drawing in neighbors. I mean, you know, we have a problem with drawing in neighbors. And so, you know, for some, another group that's a little bit bigger saying you need to draw in neighbors, it's like, we can bring them in into our neighborhood, you know. You can't work down like that. You've got to work up and motivate the individuals. And you don't do that by being a bigger organization telling a smaller organization, hey, you need to do this. No. And my point with the quality of life is we all need to do this. Okay. You need to go out on the streets with us and go door to door. Okay. Mm-hmm. You need to work on delivering Urban Times to everybody so they know what's going on. You know, it's not like you're in management and don't have to get your hands dirty. Yes, everybody's got to get their hands dirty, because that's what people notice, that it is a joint effort.
For anyone listening to this, if you would like to hear Joe King's interview, it was on July 8th, 2015, and discusses some of similar issues, as well as the archery club. So back to the quality of life plan. Is there any aspects of it that directly affect Fall Creek?
As far as the water itself.
The water right around it, or use of the waterway.
Somewhat. I mean, the neighborhood has got some of the older bridges in Indiana. The bridge on Central was one of the last Roman arch bridges in Indianapolis, and of course it's limestone and it's decaying, and it has to be replaced. But because they were identified as historic, they've got to try to recreate them or rebuild them in such a way that it matches what was there originally. So and Destination Fall Creek is somewhat active in those community outreaches that the city does, you know, about what they have to do and make sure, you know, let's look at the right architectural appointments, you know, what kind of street lights, you know, you don't want to build a nice Roman arch bridge and stick cobra lights on it, you know, you want it to be decent. So there's involvement for things like that. And, of course, you know, the big weight is, you know, the combined sewer overflow, which has actually improved quite a bit. When I originally moved here during the summer, you just didn't go outside on a hot day. And part of it was because, actually, it's not when it rains that it's bad. It's when it doesn't rain that it's bad. When it rains, of course, the sewers are getting flushed out in the creek. But then when it doesn't rain, the creek level drops and exposes the waste, and they have it. But they've done several things over the past 10 years. They installed a bladder-type gateway at about 32nd and Fall Creek. It's underground, that basically it inflates and stops sewage from the back neighborhoods running into Fall Creek. The downside of that is it's made some of the back neighborhoods a little stinky, but it's helping regulate the flow of the sewage into Fall Creek. They've done things like special tree plantings, where they develop a finger system, and where the trees actually clean the water before it actually gets to Fall Creek. You can see something like that over by Central. If you see the other side of the bridge, you see it's kind of a lot of trees and things like that. Well, that was an experiment to see how well that does it. But the big thing is the deep rock tunnel, where they can just redirect all that and keep most of it out of the creek. Which, from there, it should be downhill. I mean, I don't want to say downhill because that sounds pejorative, but it's a lot easier to start doing things. You know, we're then, because the sewer's not there, it means you can have boating on the creek. You know, the water level needs to come up, but, you know, or people fishing and things like that. So it opens up the possibility for it to be more friendly for the neighbors to interact with.
Just to give someone listening a little bit of information, the combined sewer overflows are known as CSOs, and it's the drainage system that releases sewage into the water if it rains more than a quarter of an inch. Which lately we've gotten way more than a quarter of an inch.
And hopefully maybe it's flushing it all out.
Maybe. And the deep rock tunnel is the city's fix for this. They're digging a tunnel to store the overflow rather than have it release into the waterways. And Mapleton, Fall Creek, as well as Pleasant Run, are the last two neighborhoods to be attached. Is this something that the neighbors are aware of and upset about?
No. They're not upset at all. And the city's made a great effort to let people know what's going on. The tunnel's deep enough that you don't even notice it. These drilling machines are 250 feet underground, which is in the bedrock. So except for little things that where they have to have access tunnels. I mean, one of the things is that this is all being headed by Citizens Energy Group. And because they need certain areas to put in their access tunnels and control points, one of the reasons we're able to do something at the Delaware is they need to have a control building there. Well, okay, you can have a control building here, but you know, what are we going to do to improve the area? And we're currently investigating, because they need a number of these control points. You know, is there something we can do along the Monon if they need a control station in that area where they can help us with what's needed to have access from other than 38th Street to get to the Monon, like between Fairfield and the Parkway. So the neighbors are aware, some more than others. Some are just, you know, surprised. I couldn't believe it when, you know, they're digging up and putting in the greenway that, you know, when I went door to door, people were, and not about the greenway, but just trying to get people interested in the neighborhood again. They were, what's going on there? You know, why are they knocking down those trees? And it's been out there forever. And that's a lot of the elderly. I mean, they really shut ins. I mean, you know, I think a lot of them can't afford nursing care, and they own their homes, so they stay there. But you can identify them by the ones that have no trespassing signs, so windows are all curtained and shuttered, and you don't see much activity. I mean, it's a sad story, and it's almost impossible to get them to reconnect because we can't even go to their door because of the no trespassing signs. So, and you know, I think when people get older and they live by themselves in a house, that they get somewhat ashamed too, because I'm sure the interior is needs repair and things like that. So we do have programs, not the neighborhood, but they're citywide programs that help people get repairs. And so if someone does ask, we can usually point them to the right place where they can get a gutter cleaned or fixed or whatever. So,
um, One of the things you said is that once the pollution is cleaned up out of the creek, mm-hmm. that people will be able to start using the creek more. Mm-hmm. Other than getting the pollution out, what do you think will stimulate more use of the creek?
Our wildlife is pretty resilient. I mean, we have cranes and of course, turtles and hawks and a lot of wildlife, otters, beavers. There have been sighting of some deer along here. So, and I think they're kind of, you know, they follow along the creek. But I think the fact that it is becoming a little bit wilder, that it's exciting for people to see that. And I think that gets them involved. I mean, and they're even noticing when they walk along the trail, they look down and they see things like beaver chewing on the side of the tree, which is not so much of a good thing, but just the amount of wildlife that is now where before they didn't even know it was there, and now that they're closer to the creek, they can see it, and I think that makes them appreciate it more or excites them because, you know, I've never seen a beaver before. You know, they've been in the neighborhood for a long time. It's just now you're able to see them. So, you know, it just the fact that if somebody decides to fish, they can keep what they catch. Just, you know, and if they want to go wading, I mean, I would recommend it at this point, but, you know, people get their feet wet, you know, and see what's going on, which then, you know, they look at other areas that can be improved, like down further by 38th Street. That's an old railroad yard, kind of a brownfield. But, you know, if we can convert that into a bigger park area that's more wooded and whatever, I think it keeps people from becoming too urbanized, you know, mm-hmm. where everything's concrete and sidewalks and no yards or whatever like that, to give them that green space that I think they really need and to... When I was raising my son, you know, I say, well, let's turn over that rock. Let's see what's under it. It's that kind of curiosity that, you know, if you're sitting at home or just sitting down watching TV or on the computer, kids don't learn physics anymore. And I'm not talking about physics, the formal training, but just how the world works, you know, and why something's heavy or, you know, what leverage is all about, which you kind of learn when you interact with what's going on out there. I mean, you know, it's, and I think perhaps, if I'm not full crap, that people will see that is really beneficial. I mean, kids need fresh air. They need to move around. And they're not going to move around on a computer, and they're not going to move around watching TV, and they're not going to move around, you know, using a cell phone for their knowledge base. They need to see what's really out there. My wife and I, of course, we have a big garden back there. And, you know, we see hummingbirds. We see hummingbird moths, which you probably haven't seen, but they're big moths that look like hummingbirds. you know, there's just a lot of things. If you stop and take pause, you'll see how rich the environment is. And I think that's kind of the whole green push anyway, is to reestablish that.
Well, from the sounds of it, I probably already know the answer, but one of the things we found during our interviews is that people really think the health of the waterway and the health of the surrounding community really affect one another. Would you say that's fair?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if the creek stinks, nobody wants to go outside. And, you know, if you don't go outside, you're not moving around, you know, you become lethargic, you know, you just put on weight. Not that I have much of an excuse, but it does matter. I mean, if, you know, people say, get outside, take a walk, and you go outside and it smells bad, you're not going to want to walk. You know, if you go outside and you really don't see anything but concrete and street and whatever, there's nothing interesting about that. But there is about you know, the natural interactions. And, you know, I've got pet projects that I've got on my list of things that I'd like to do, and that's like even helping people identify what kind of trees are in the neighborhood. You know, we have like one of the largest oak trees in the Indianapolis area, right down at Woodland and 38th Street, at Fairfield, actually, if you go by the house. And it's one of those trees that have pine cones that are about the size of a golf ball that have the real hairy caps. And it's a huge tree. But there's oak and maple and everything all along here, and nobody knows that they're here. And, you know, so there's an education that people could gain. I mean, they don't realize that there's walnut trees, too, everywhere. These are things that I learned in school. I mean, when I had high school biology, you know, we had to make leaf collections and identify trees, and they don't do that anymore. And I'd like to see people become familiar again with their surroundings. After all, you know, when the big one comes, we don't want people walking around without their cell phones and not knowing who they are or what they are. You know, they can't Google something. It's good just to have a personal knowledge base that it seems to be fading a little bit.
So you've invested a lot of time and effort into improving the waterway and the neighborhood. And what would you say is one of your greatest successes?
I don't know how you read success. You know, I try to do what I can to get people motivated. You know, I buy T-shirts, you know, with the neighborhood association on it, you know. And, you know, I don't expect to be refunded, but I want to give those out so people can identify with it. You know, I buy the buckets and the pickup tools that they use. And that's been somewhat successful. I mean, it is pleasant to be driving down the parkway. This is Jade. She is a snowshoe, and you're hungry now too, aren't you? Yeah. To see someone out with one of those buckets picking up trash, whereas, you know, 5 years ago, nobody was doing anything. So it's still in its infancy, and, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done. So I don't want to take any pressure off. You know, I still have that sense of urgency that, you know, we got to get this done. We got to get this done. You know, this has to be done. And because for a long time, I mean, that's been gone. And I mentioned having an effective board. You know, we're getting to that critical mass where we've got enough people saying, okay, we can do this and we can do this, and I'm willing to participate in that, and I know this person that can help us out with this, and to really get things done instead of just talking about, you know, we need a grant, we need money to do this. And it says, no, you don't need that at all. You need willpower and inertia to get it going. So somewhat successful in the sense that I see things beginning to happen. But I, you know, success is a long-term proposition, and I'm not willing to say, hey, you know, I are the champion. I mean, it's more of seeing that there is a difference being made, and people are beginning to get on the right path.
So then what do you hope the neighborhood looks like 10, 15 years down the road?
I'd like there not to be any abandoned houses. I'd like to see all the lawns kept cut. I'd like to see the creek preserved and be a major draw to the neighborhood. I mean, there's things like just reduce crime. I mean, you'll never eliminate crime, but, you know, you can, when you have those things that make people feel comfortable with where they live, they tend to improve it. You know, I'm running for the city council, and this isn't a plug, but what I see what's happened with the government is they're ignoring the really foundation of what the city is, and that's its neighborhood. You know, when they decide to spend money on a big project that's got high visibility, but really very little impact on the average citizen, I don't like that. Because just like in New York where they say, you know, if there's one broken window, we got to get it fixed, you know, because it just kind of brings down everything. When people go outside and look at the sidewalks that are all broken down and the curbs that are gone and the potholed streets and whatever, it doesn't make them feel good. It doesn't encourage them to do something more. It encourages them to complain, but it doesn't make them feel good. And that's kind of what quality of life is, that people are comfortable in their surroundings. And so what I would like to see is to see people are comfortable. I mean, because comfort means happiness. I mean, you know, it's just you're motivated when things are pleasant. You're dissuaded and demotivated when it looks like it's too big of a task for you to tackle. And so, you know, I would just like to see the neighborhood improve with the help of the city and directing more funding to code enforcement and safety, you know, police department, and, you know, less on paying for electric cars. I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense to me.
I guess finally, is there anything you wish you could have said during the interview but didn't get the chance?
You're lucky I said as much as I did, because I'm basically an introvert, and I don't, I mean, that's one of the reasons my head was probably down for a long time, is that, you know, people scare the daylights out of me. But, you know, I mean, that's one of my goals, and even doing this is, you know, you get to be my age, and you say, okay, I got to start doing something different, and the only way I'm going to do that is change my whole dynamic, so... and that's what people need to do just generally, you know, maybe stop what you're doing and do something different, because nothing's changing. I know you're hungry now too, Jade. Usually wait, but she's a curious one. She actually fetches, and you can throw a little yarn ball and she'll bring it back to you. Oh yeah. She's a smart little kitty.
All right. Well, thank you for participating in the interview and all of this and coming out of your shell to do this for me and say so much about it. Okay. I appreciate it.
Okay.